listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, 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 live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, July 7th already. My name is Michael Kelly and I am here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. As always, I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Glad to have those joining us live as well as those listening to the archives. And the Spirit of Life is, of course, a weekly educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Excuse me. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, we're going to have another great discussion to follow up on last week's very interesting exploration of alien life. But before we do, we're going to go over our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. And those are, 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. All right, so Dr. Hunter, we're going to have another interesting, fascinating discussion tonight. Now, last week, we examined these in-depth questions about the implications of alien life. And, you know, we tackled these questions and we came back with a resounding, definitive, yeah, they've probably been here. And I think we're going to, you know, continue that tonight. And, of course, I know forced to choose, I'm going to say that yes, I do believe that we've been visited at least at some point in our history by intelligent life. But I think out of the two of us, tend to be a bit more skeptical, if that's not a dirty word. And I'm open to the possibility that it could be something else. Last week we went on over different alternative possibilities. We covered a range of things last week, one of which was, the interesting notion that when you don't know, you don't know, so could be time travelers, things like that. So covered some good ground.
Well, I find what we're opening up to now really interesting, and even with the Antarctic now, of course, melting a bit, and the claim is that pyramids are showing up, and could that well have been life previous to 12,000 years ago, 50,000 years ago? And how did that? Do we have a different cycle of civilization here that we, you know, really haven't entertained before because we didn't have the science to explore it? We didn't have the mind to be open to that possibility. So in the event that's true, it's entirely true that, you know, it could be entirely true that we've been visited by other beings from other dimensions of space-time, whatever, and that there could very well be many species. You know, Star Trek might not be too off.
Right. And I wonder, you know, if we have indeed been visited by species, intelligent species, how big an impact did they really have on human culture? I mean, I would say the default argument is to say they've had a massive impact on human culture, but I wonder if it's not as big as we think it might be.
You know, I've had this discussion with people, and I know how I'm going to sound, but I got to think back in the 1800s, how we all of a sudden, late 1800s, early 1900s, all of a sudden had this massive movement in industrialization and technology. And I'm wondering how much of that information was downloaded from another place into somebody's mind to invent, or how much of it was actually given or negotiated with other species from other places. I don't know how humanity in just a relatively short time. So think about like 1880, you know, to 1930, about how we suddenly had cars and were flying, and like there's this massive movement of industrialization and various kinds of technology that hadn't really been there. It's like we went from, you know, stone castles and stone houses and some wood to suddenly big concrete buildings and, you know, big steel buildings and girders. And
well, I think it's the steel and the skyscraper technology that, you know, that is very, you know, different from older architecture per se. But you know, when it comes, go ahead.
I'm just saying that how did we move that quickly?
You know,
being here thousands of years, even the last 2,000 years, how did we move that quickly? So to me, that information came from somewhere, and even from the 1940s, you know, the Second World War, even
right.
1930s, 1940s, and suddenly we're, you know, traveling faster than the speed of light, kind of.
Relatively
thing.
Speaking.
Yeah.
Relatively.
Yeah.
Get it? The theory.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I would, I'm going to be a little contrarian here, not just because I find it fun, and not just because, you know, I can't help being the devil's advocate in any situation, but I'm going to say this. I think that when you look at technological progression, it didn't stop when the Roman Empire fell. It continued on through the medieval period. It was the Renaissance, I believe, and the scientific method that became to be more ubiquitous that started this drive. And you can see in the 1600s and the 1700s this ramp up of technology. Into the 1800s, you have now steam engines and real industrialization in the 18th and 19th centuries. And then, of course, into the late 19th century, going into the 20th century, you have all sorts of academic fields that are branching out and learning more and more and more, and that knowledge compounds upon itself, and then you start to have exponential growth. And that growth happens faster and faster and faster the more knowledge you've accumulated. But
I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying I think we moved really fast in a very short amount of time with certain kinds of technology.
That's true. I mean, if I was going to point at anything, as opposed to like airplanes, which, you know, we've had notions of being able to fly in such a way for quite a long time, in a rudimentary form anyway, I would say things like, oh, the cutting edge of science, you know, different things like microchip technology and lasers and things like that would be a... Maybe it's just because it seems more futuristic, but I was going to say that would be more alien-esque to me.
Well, even though we're only seemingly getting that now, it's been around for a long time. And even when, again, we're talking about implications of other kinds of life forms, but we go back to early Star Trek 50 years ago, you know, or some of the old Outer Limits, you know, which was prior to that. And as soon as, you know, television started, of course, you're having those, oh, we're being invaded kind of thing.
Sure.
So I'm thinking the concepts were there. So if the concepts were there, was there already the technology, but it gradually got introduced? You know, the using microwaves in the 1950s, for instance. It's just it didn't become mass marketed. So I guess that's what I'm saying when it was so quick, but the public may not have had access to these corporate developments because of patents and other things, and you know, milk it for all you can.
Well, it takes time for things to filter down. I mean, we've had smartphones for 3 decades since the 90s, but it took time for the technology to be refined and to become affordable. Even though I don't know that you can call a $1,200 phone affordable, but you know, it's all relative. Smartphones, another great thing that I would, you know, revolutionary in the internet, and the internet of things in terms of products is revolutionary. So those, to my mind, and not that I subscribe to this, I do think it's possible for humans to have come up with these on our own. And I don't think that, us getting technological help from aliens, well, how do I want to say this? I still believe that we could have had some kind of interaction with aliens. We could have even perhaps been inspired at some point. Maybe, but I think that we could have developed these technologies on our own and still had some kind of contact with aliens. I don't think that necessarily
means. Dr. Stephen is bringing up a good point in the chat room. He said that public education in the 1800s and books being more available to the general population.
Absolutely.
I get it.
Well, and also you have, don't want to get too super political or, you know, historical here, but when you had classical liberalism come to the forefront and you had more of a meritocracy as opposed to the aristocracy of the old, you had people that could go to universities that weren't automatically wealthy, you're casting a wider net. You're going to catch more geniuses with that have the ability to go to school, to go to university, to go, you know, and learn and do and create. So I think it is a compounding effect, but that's a great point, Dr. Stephen. And then again, you know, there's so much that we don't know, and there are so many things that are could be cutting edge that are beyond our knowledge or periphery that may well have come from some kind of extraterrestrial source. When you don't know, you don't know. It's unverifiable, and frankly, it's kind of fun to think about, too.
I have an old friend of mine who... He's now in his late 70s, traveled the world, science guy.
Everywhere. Is it Bill Nye?
He's gone. Sorry?
I'm sorry. Is it Bill Nye?
No, not Bill Nye. But he's, everywhere he's gone, he's had photos of alien ships show up in his pictures. Now, prior to digital, when he had film, and he'd get this film developed, he would... These ships would be there, and all different kinds of ships. It wasn't just the, you know, the discs. There'd be the triangles and the, you know, the long cigar shaped ships. And it's interesting because he would just tuck them away, scrapbooks of these things. When it went digital, some of his pictures changed, but he would still, you know, see them. Again, being the world traveler, he just somehow knew when to put his camera up or something. But he'd couldn't see them with the naked eye. He's only seen a few with the naked eye only a very few times, but always in his pictures. You know, he didn't ever sell them, didn't go to the media, anything. He said, no, I don't want that kind of attention. It was for his own interest. And he told very few people, and he showed even fewer, you know, the evidence. And I've seen some of his pictures, and it's mind-boggling. He has, you know, traveled through, like I say, every country. But Russia, he'd always get pictures. South America, but probably the most he ever got was out of China. Everywhere he went. He said even in the back hills of China, it's nothing for the people there. They just shrug it off because they see the ships all the time and with the naked eye. So I'm thinking, and as he would say, that interdimensional. You know, from my perspective, we might see it as cloaking devices, but really it's being between the dimensions.
Well,
I know that's kind of weird to say if you don't get the concept, but...
Let's think about it this way. When it's almost impossible to conceive of interstellar travel that's faster than light without dealing with the issue of time relativity. So if these... beings, if these creatures have advanced enough to they can cross light years, entire spans of the galaxy within, well, either they're doing it faster than light and they've somehow managed to solve the problem of time relativity and they might do that by bending space and time, maybe creating dimensional portals or wormholes, if you will, from point to point. Maybe that mastery of the time-space dimension allows them to manipulate things like our ability to see them or track them in the same plane of time-space.
I'm going to share a little story. This same fellow who takes all these pictures was a client of mine back in the late 80s into the 90s. And it was probably around, I think, 2002 of thereabouts, that he booked a session with me for, again, just a reading and coming to my home. Now, that morning at about 8 o'clock, something happened to me, and I started automatic writing. Now, his appointment was at 10, 8 o'clock. Got the paper out, man, and I'm drawing pictures, and I'm writing names, and I'm doing symbols, and I'm saying, whoa, this is weird. This is not my thing, but it's happening. He got there at 10 o'clock, and I said, man, I'm just so glad you're here. So I started showing him, like giving him all these papers, throwing them at him, and started doing the reading for him. And I'm explaining about power sources in alien ships. I kid you not, Michael. It was the most bizarre experience of my life. Hmm. And how these things would take place, where they are, and it's through thought and the connection, and kind of like crystals, but they're not. He said, oh, I know what you mean. I said, okay. Now, I even gave him names of these beings. He said, yeah, I know who he is, because apparently he talked to them all the time, and I didn't know that about him. And so I was exhausted. That session with him went on for another 4 hours. I remember very little of it. Probably because it was too much for my brain. But I know what I did note is that for about 3 or 4 days, I didn't feel well. Headachy, nauseous, tired. You know, it was like, oof, what happened? And it was that different frequency. So he called me, a couple of months later and said, mm-hmm. I'd really like to have another session with you, but I'm worried about if it affects you. I said, no, I get it now. When you channel spirits, or, you know, in this dimension, space-time, fourth, fifth dimension, whatever, that's a different frequency. But that intergalactic, interdimensional, extraterrestrial, however you want to see it, that's a whole different frequency. And I said, now I know how to adjust my own frequency. So I'm very sensitive to it now. It's kind of like the times that I can feel something and say, oh, they're around. And when I look up in the sky, I can see those three lights that stay there for hours and hours. It's only they're just hovering over there. That's common for me now. I can tune into them.
It's very interesting.
I didn't tell many people that for a long time, but through a being that visited me afterward is how I developed the, feel, sense, think, and do formula. And that's the metaphysical parenting material came out of that time period that I had. The being that was talking to me all the time and channeling this information, his name was Freas, F-R-E-A-S. And the weirdest things would happen because, again, computers were different back then. Trust me, I had it on one. I printed out, and my daughter would enter it in a different computer because they weren't friendly with each other. And she was visiting; she'd do it, and every time she'd try to make a correction or something, her whole computer would just start doing weird things. So as long as she followed it and wrote it letter for letter, you know, word for word, it was fine. One day she came to me. She said, So is Freas not necessarily tall? I said, no, he's not tall. Does he not necessarily have hair? I said, no hair that I know of. And she said, I saw him. I said, okay. But the way she saw him and the way I saw him were a little different because, and what he was wearing, he projected what she could relate to. But it was a very strange time. It wasn't the spirits we know of. It was definitely a being from a different dimension.
When you say a being from a different dimension, well, let's talk about one implication of alien life. If there's alien life, are there alien ghosts? And when we talk about beings from a different dimension, you know, are those, you know, living aliens that are interdimensional? What would you call a ghost that we see, or an apparition, a spirit that might still be around? Is that a interdimensional human at that point, evolved to a different state? Just musings.
Those are super questions that I can't necessarily answer. And look, a lot of people claim to have those answers, and you know, because that's their theory. I don't know. I can tell you the theories. I can share some theories with you. Some spirits ascend to other worlds. Some are grounded. Some, I don't know what they're doing. They got their own learning in corporeal form. Do you know what I mean? It's like, there's lots of theories. I don't really know. Because every time I think I know something, I have stood to be corrected. So it's just a theory. I just know that it's by a feeling I have, or information, or how I'm experiencing it and translating for people, that it, they can relate to it, and that's great in whatever form. So I don't know. Are there alien ghosts? I wouldn't think so, Michael. Where do we go as spirits? Do we then go back to an alien form? That's a possibility. I don't know.
Well,
I always say I'm going back to the home planet. So
I mean, life is so infinitely big. I mean, we have just one little speck of a rock that's orbiting one among billions of suns, and our galaxy among billions of galaxies that make up these massive structures of galaxy filaments. It's just, when you think about the immensity of space and all the possibilities, it just, it becomes mind-boggling. It puts things in perspective. So, you know, when we die, when we talk about reincarnation, when we talk about past lives, and we talk about life after death, it all revolves around the plane of Earth, our world. And I think there could be, you know, again, just not grasping at straws, it's not the right word, speculating in terms of, well, why might that be? It could be because the Earth has a specific energy. We're all of this Earth. We're all born here. We're of it, and we are attached to it. And if Earth has some kind of Gaia-like consciousness, even if it's rudimentary, maybe we're attached to that, too. Mm-hmm. So just some ideas about that particular thing, and I wonder if it would hold true with alien life. So are there alien ghosts, you know? That would,
you know, the visual I get in that is, let's say, Earth and its atmosphere, you know, its densities of, you know, it could be, you know, 100,000 different kinds of layers, and we're existing within those layers.
Sure.
You know, until our frequency changes and we exist beyond those layers, you know, and others are beaming into those layers. So it's like this cyclic kind of thing in Earth beings. The reason I get that kind of a visual is, for me, I have a lot of past life recall, but it's only of the last 1,000 years. I have zero connection to, you know, when that so-called calendar change around the time of Christ to, you know, 900 or 1,000 AD. I have no connection at all. I read about it and I find it interesting, but I don't feel an affinity for any of it. I think back to the Egyptian times, you know, thousands of years ago, I'm connected. But it's no connection. And I feel like we do come, that's my sense, is we come in clusters. But wherever we were, at part of a cluster, we beamed into this interdimensional space-time of Earth. And we've been, I've been doing these lifetimes for the last 1,000 years and in this space.
There's something that keeps tugging you along, because Earth is not stationary, not simply around the sun, but the sun itself is moving. So our entire solar system and everything that is entailed with it is constantly moving throughout the galaxy. The galaxy itself is constantly moving. So you are not simply bound to a, you know, a place. It's a place that's moving. So there's something that's tugging you along through the, you know, abstract realm, keeping you attached to this move constantly in motion, you know, spaceship Earth.
Exactly. That's my sense of it. So what are those implications? My experience with people, and now I've been doing readings for about 50 years, and I've met all kinds of people who claim abduction, people who've had, you know, other contact or seen lots of crafts, you know, with those claims. And they are changed in a way, and each profound by its experience, you know, and how, you know, personalized the connection was, but how that changed people to become more open-minded.
Yeah.
And even people who were, let's say, very religiously indoctrinated start changing their mind about life and what it means to live when they've had that kind of experience. Now, what, is it a spirit that's in your house? Well, you can kind of incorporate that into whatever. But when it's seeing a spaceship fluttering at the end of your driveway, you know, these things back in the 1960s, I kid you not, this one old man told me, you know, his wife and kids came screaming up the driveway, and he looked out, and there was these little craft, like think of many kinds of discs, you know, all hovering at the end of his driveway and flitting about. He saw it with his own eyes. He had seen the cigar things. He had seen, you know, so he had changed. He was always that interested in what else there is to life, and he would look at the mysteries of life. So I think the implications are that we do change as a result of having some kind of experience. Now, just to be told it, I don't know as your worldview changes, except to entertain the idea it's possible. But when people are emotionally moved, it does.
It's, you know, when you don't have the opportunity to experience something yourself, you are taking somebody else at their word for it. And not simply that they're not lying, but that they're also just not wrong. So it's, and a lot of people are credible, and I think there are a lot of credible sightings, a lot of credible things that have happened and that are out there, excuse me. But it reminds me of something that Thomas Paine said. He said that he has never been given a revelation by God, he has never spoken with an angel, and he is therefore forced not to have, you know, in terms of the Book of Revelation or the Bible in itself, Thomas Paine, a founding father and, you know, philosopher of the late 18th century, he said that you're not asking me to believe in this God, you're asking me to believe in this person.
Yep.
And I think there are people out there that are worth believing in, but remember, just we're all doing the best we can to figure things out. As new information comes along, we adjust our parameters for what our understanding of reality is. And, you know, take everything with a grain of salt, realizing that all of us can be wrong from time to time. So don't, if something doesn't come out to be true, all right, take it in stride. Don't ignore it. Use it to update your worldview, but then don't also give up or think that everything's rigged or that nothing is real, because of course there are real things out there and there are a few real examples. And I think we've been able to get back into this topic for a good long while now, and I was there have a few things we haven't even touched on. But before we kind of wrap up this topic for tonight and move on to our inner oracle and tarot cards, which we'll get to soon, I know that we talked about some anecdotes, and I don't really know that we got in any from our listeners, but you
Dr. Stephen has said his first saucers dropped into his world at age 10, five of them in a V formation. Thanks for sharing that, Stephen.
Oh, that's very cool.
This science friend of mine who traveled the world, his was at age 9, and it was both with him and his brother, and out living on a farm. The same thing. And he was changed ever since that. And that's part of why he pursued science and, you know, the way his mind works. And so for me, I would have these particular kinds of dreams as a kid that never really made sense, but it also wasn't a really particularly pleasant childhood. So I can explain it either way, but that I would start to see the ships when I'm 18, 19. You know, that's and how it's become just part of my reality is just the journey that I accept. But I think that, well, Stephen Greer would say that abduction stories or young story or kids who have experienced, let's say an alien interaction, often then interpret it as witches or goblins or, you know, something like that, because that's like the perception of what kids would see is something dark, different, you know.
I suppose that's I suppose that's true, especially in the age when human beings didn't think of the possibility of life outside of Earth, so anything that would have been seen would have to be within the confines of their worldview. Aliens or alien life don't exist. There are no other planets really to speak of other than Earth. Of course, the ones you can see with the naked eye we've known about for quite some time. But to have an Earth, to have a, you know, a people, you know, we couldn't conceive of anything else. So you would view it in those terms. I would wonder, though, I was raised on sci-fi, aliens. I can't remember a time in my life where I didn't know about the concept of alien life. So I wonder if kids in the more modern era would interpret things differently. And I wonder, you don't really hear about children with, or I haven't heard about any stories of children with alien life or UFO sightings or things like that.
Well, one of the youngest clients for me, I think she was 16 or 17, came to me and really believed that, you know, she had been abducted, and she kept getting visited by these aliens. And she even knew kind of one of them would take a human form. And she would say that he would change form in her dreams or in her psyche into something that was human related. And she was terrified, you know, and I think my job.
Uh-oh. Dr. Hunter, did we lose you?
Things.
Oh, so, we're back. We got disconnected for a minute there. I had joked in the chat earlier that I had sacrificed dial-up modems to the internet gods to ensure our success, but apparently not enough. But we're back and live. But just bear in mind,
okay,
the last 10 seconds.
I was just
going to
say that this girl was she claimed that, you know, that she would see this guy and shopping one day with her mom and verified, mom, that's the guy. And then when they went to go talk to him, he actually vanished in front of them. And so stories like that, but that changed her view and changed her view of, you know, of the world. And she pursued metaphysics, became a reader, became a healer, you know, and carried on with her life from there. But the thing was to empower herself and be okay and not be afraid, right? Like whatever this experience is, like, you know, lay your boundaries.
Absolutely. And realize, you know, what is it, what's in our control and what's not. And, you know, there's, excuse me, the chair fell a little bit there. If you could hear that, I apologize. But
Dr. Stephen, if I can just say, is recommending people look at Schoolyard UFO Encounters by Preston Dennett. And I'll attest that's a really cool story. You can probably find some of it on YouTube, little things. UFOs landed in a schoolyard in Africa. And how these kids talk to these aliens. It's, and they had no experience of this before.
Oh, that is fascinating.
But we're interviewed, and I highly recommend that story. It's really cool. Really cool. So, all I can say.
Well, since we've been talking about some stories and some different things, I thought, let's go ahead and end this topic before we go on to the cards with a few of some of the well-known and maybe one or two another not so well known examples, and I'm going to go ahead and narrow it down to three. We're going to go ahead and cut it for time. They're just a few short snippets from a Newsweek article that went over some of the most credible sightings. This is by, let's see, want to cite this actually since I'm going to be referencing it. This article is from Callum Patton from Newsweek back in 2019. So this is right when the Pentagon videos had been released, so it kind of started this new interest in it. And my father and I were talking about one of these stories, and so I was happy to see it on this list. It's Japan Airlines Flight 1628. This mm-hmm. occurred in 1986 over Alaska. The pilot and crew of a Japan Airlines cargo flight carrying wine from Paris to Tokyo reported seeing strange, flashing, colorful lights that followed their aircraft over Alaska. The New York Times even reported at the time, during an FAA investigation into the sighting, that the yellow, amber, and green lights were spotted on a clear evening by the pilot, Kenji Taraki. The lights appeared as the flight crossed into Alaska from Canada while the plane cruised at 35,000 feet. The FAA could come to no definitive conclusion about the sighting. And, you know, these are multiple people seeing this. They're not somebody that is just unknown. There are some very, I would say, stable and... Sorry, there's a dive bomber going through the neighborhood. You'll have to forgive me. Credible people. Airline pilots tend to be very reasonable, very rational individuals. And I think they make excellent excellent examples. One more that I'll mention was from the USS Nimitz carrier group. It was off the California coast in 2004. U.S. Navy pilot Commander David Fravor recalled seeing, quote, something not from this earth while commanding a U.S. Navy strike squadron. It was about 100 miles off the coast of California. He recounted observing a tic-tac-shaped vessel moving at great speed. The UFO was seen by a crew separate from Fravor that tracked the object and filmed it for more than a minute. So this is multiple vantage points seeing the same thing. This footage is some of the footage that was declassified and published in the New York Times following the Pentagon's acknowledgement of its internal program. And the last one that I'll mention before we move on to our final section of cards and is a little bit more recent. It was off the East Coast this time in 2015. This is footage from a U.S. Navy F/A-18. It was released by the Department of Defense, and it shows very similar video to what the crew of the Nimitz found, that flight group off California in 2004. These, you know, tic-tac shaped, you know, these white vehicles that seem to have no source of propulsion that move in mysterious ways. And you can search for this video. It's readily available. But these are just some very fascinating things, and it is beyond human technology, so what is it? It's inexplicable, and it lends itself heavily to the notion that we may well have some kind of imminent formal contact, perhaps. So, some interesting things.
Well, we just have to stay open-minded, because I believe that the day of reckoning is soon to be, myself.
Well, that sounds harsh. I thought maybe the... I'm picturing, you know, Vulcans landing and us launching into a new federation of utopian-like existence, but apparently we're going to have a reckoning, so that's going to be fun.
Well, I think, you know, I think governments have to stop being so arrogant and fighting amongst themselves, and I think that's the bottom line. So there we go. That's my take on it.
That'll
but
happen.
This is, I love this topic, and we could go on for hours, I know. Thanks for those who are joining us and little comments and stuff, and it's fun. It's a fun topic.
That's good times.
But I think we better get on with some cards now, Michael.
Oh, I was segueing there.
Okay.
So
it's good. I love those testimonies. People, please just take a look around. If you ever want to, go on MUFON, MUFON.com. And they also have a page where you can see the recent sightings reports are on a page, too, and it's really interesting. So MUFON.com. It's a mutual UFO network is what it's called.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Yep. So great discussion. And now it's that time of the evening. We're going to be pulling some inner oracle cards, some cards to kind of get you thinking. These were developed for the International Society of Metaphysical Humanism back in the day when it was called that. Before we updated the name, I actually still have that on my my original deck from all those years ago. A little bit of trivia. But and then, of course, Dr. Hunter, you're going to pull a tarot card to pair with it. And I I'm just scrolling through the chat. I believe Jamil is first.
We have Jamil.
And I have number 11, awareness. Every human being has a responsibility to increase their awareness for fulfillment and peaceful coexistence. People generally do the best they can according to their current level of awareness, knowledge, experience, and resources. This card may indicate that an increased awareness in some area is needed. Continue to increase your awareness of self and others through observation, acquired knowledge, and a positive attitude.
Well, in support of that, Jamil, is the Hierophant. It's one of the major arcana. So, sorry, I just had to cough there.
That's not allowed. Oh, it's not like man. I haven't muted five times tonight to do the exact same thing.
The Hierophant is really about, in a word, stability, conformity, routines, home, what keeps you secure. So when you have awareness with that, it's just take inventory of your life for a moment. Make sure that you're feeling like there's some kind of rhythm, routine, that you're living from the inside out, in other words. So not to put your energy too far out there. It's just that awareness of your inner sanctum, if you will. So it's just grounding yourself, Jamil. And when you ground yourself, your eyes can get bigger and you can see more. So I think that's the message here, is what I see. All right. Who's next, Michael? Are you on mute or I'm on mute?
I was not on mute. That doesn't happen. That's never happened before, but I was coughing. That's why I was on mute.
Yeah, okay.
But nonetheless, I want to say, Ronnie, I know we had asked last week, and I was on the other computer after this one crashed. So I didn't have it in front of me, but gonna pull one here for you. And please do correct us in chat if that's incorrect. But number one, perfection.
I like it.
Let's see. Always remember that you are perfect just as you are, a perfect work in progress, always changing and growing. Today is a reflection of past choices, and tomorrow is changeable by choices made today. This card may indicate that a situation is either perfect or not perfect for you. Embrace all mistakes, as they are vital to your growth, while striving for a better future. Reflect to see what contributes to your perfect journey and move forward gracefully.
Well, in support of that is the Page of Hearts, the Page of Cups. Remember that pages are the communicators between two languages, two worlds. They're that bridge, so to speak. So when you have perfection with a communicator and coming from the heart, quite literally, is keeping it real with yourself. And what I want to say here, Ronnie, is filtering out anything that doesn't resonate with you. You know, anything that's, and just kind of roll your eyes and walk away. People don't make sense. You know, I heard somebody say to me the other day, look, people are so crazy these days that when somebody says 2 + 2 = 11, I go, okay, and walk away. And sometimes we have to kind of take that approach. It's not to enter into things that don't resonate with you in your world for striving to be more of who you are. And being that good communicator is sometimes just knowing when not to communicate at all. So I think that there's just some observations going on and centering yourself there too. And that knowing that you are perfect, that you are who you are. Now, perfection doesn't imply that we aren't growing. Mm-hmm. And there isn't always something that's changeable or workable. So that's why I say we're communicating with our inner selves too. So,
good message.
I hope that resonates in some way. You know, and I think we're having a short list here tonight, Michael, which is fine because we went over in our program. So I don't see any other names, do you?
No, we just had a couple of our listeners looking for cards tonight. The reason I did pad it a little bit, you might have noticed, but nonetheless. Mm. No, but we're happy to have you, and hope that those cards connected. Jamil, appreciate that feedback. Glad to hear that it resonates. And, you know, I was looking through chat, and one of our listeners, Dr. Greg, had a subject in mind of do no harm, and, you know, really what does that entail? I thought that might be an interesting topic, because what does it mean to do no harm? Of course, we're going to pair that with our version of do no harm and do right, but we all have definitions of what that means.
And good idea.
Maybe to talk about what those definitions are, how we can do no harm, and how that entails doing right. So I think it might be a good topic for next week. So
perfect.
So looking forward to having you all join us next week, Dr. Hunter. Any last thoughts before we kind of wrap up?
Hi, you know, we're in a crazy time in the world, and things are, I think, you know, when they say time is speeding up, there's, you know, it feels that way for sure.
It does.
The world is changing, and just navigate the best you can, everybody. It's not about having control. It's about being a good manager. And yes, zone in for what you want and work toward what you want. But sometimes you have to take a little detour. Sometimes you have to, you know, stay at a red light for a few minutes. So it's just navigate as best you can. Hang in there.
Absolutely. That's great advice. Makes me think of the saying I've heard that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional.
True.
We're all going to suffer. Sure. We're all going to go through a little bit of pain at the red lights or the delays or the little irritations. But when we realize that, you know, we're here to live this life and no other at this moment, live in the moment, enjoy it, for it's never going to come again. So thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Hunter, as always. Looking forward to kind of getting into another deep philosophical topic next week. And until then, listen, think, grow, learn, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.